Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, and joining me from North America is my usual partner, Jeff Reinbold. It's another big week for NFL fans here in the UK. We've got the Jacksonville Jaguars against the Buffalo Bills at Wembley Stadium, the NFL on Regent Street event on Saturday. But before we get to all of that, there are plenty of things to talk about, Jeff, for NFL Week 6. We are relatively short on time today because it's a Wembley weekend. I know you've got to get off to meetings and things like that over there at the Hamilton Tiger Cats, but we did want to get a podcast out today. But, oh boy, so many talking points in the NFL.
I tell you what, it is hot topics all over the place. I mean, whether it's dirty play or one coach saying that another coach's team plays dirty or bad play design, bad play execution, just bad decisions all over the place. And great defense last night in the Eagles-Giants game. There's a lot to talk about in the NFL this week, as always.
Me and our producer Nick Pike were talking, Jeff, before we started recording this. And we were just saying that the NFL, not to knock the Premier League or some of the other sports we have here in the UK, but if you were to go down the pub with your mates and talk NFL, there are, I think, the talking points and the storylines that come out of each weekend, it's almost a season's worth in other sports. I mean, it is incredible.
Yeah, it is. And you know what the thing that I love about the National Football League, and you don't love it when you're picking games because it's so difficult to do. But unlike other sports where you know in certain games there's just no way that the best that you're hoping for, let's say in the Premiership, the best you can hope for is a tie, because you know your team's not going to win that match. In the National Football League, you look at the scores every week and you just say, how in the world did that happen? And, you know, that's again, I think that's what makes it such a great game. And you look around at the divisional races, how they're starting to shape up, Neil, and we're going to be in some battles all the way down past Christmas.
Yeah, we both went 7-7 in our picks this week, Jeff. I was so close. I thought I was going to be really clever because I picked the Cleveland Browns to win against Denver. And actually, for a long time, it looked like they were going to. We'll talk about that in a little while. But I want to start, Jeff, with a coaching decision. So it's the talk of the NFL this past couple of days. Chuck Pagano and the incredible play call to go for the fake punt. 4th-and-3 on their own 37-yard line. They're down by 6 at that stage to the New England Patriots late in the third quarter. So there's plenty of time left. The Colts send everyone out to the right side of the formation. Then they have, Griff Whalen, the wide receiver, lines up at center. Colt Anderson, the safety, goes under quarterback. They're surrounded, those two, by 5 New England Patriots players. They actually snap the football and Anderson gets engulfed by players. Chuck Pagano says, well, first of all, Jeff, he said it was on him and that he's got to execute that better and coach it better. But he's since said that he doesn't regret the call at all. First of all, I want to dig into this a little bit, but your top line thoughts when you were watching that. I know Chris Collinsworth on the commentary was absolutely incredulous, but for you as a special teams coach, man who's been a special teams coordinator, what were your thoughts?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think there are two thoughts in that in the process as you go into it. Number one, you're taking guys out of what they normally do and asking them to do something under pressure. Right? It's one thing to do it in practice, but it's another thing to do it in the heat of the moment in a big, big game. And I think that that's where these kinds of gimmick plays have the potential to backfire on you. If you're a Redskins fan, you remember back to Jim Zorn's short career as a head coach with the Redskins. The defining play of his career was a play very similar to this, a swinging gate play that they botched, you're playing well and you're in the game, right? The game is a game at that point. And now you go out at a pivotal moment in the game and really reach for a play. And reach for whether you, again, I don't buy his, personally, I don't buy his deal. We were trying to catch him in a substitution change where they had 12 guys on the field.
You don't catch that guy out.
No, why would you substitute? Because every special teams coach works on these kinds of things, how you cover down. When we say cover down, put enough people, deploy enough people based on the formation. Who are the eligible receivers? That's the kind of stuff you work on every week in case something like this comes up. Because people will do this to you just to see if how you line up. Then they'll either take the time count or they'll shift back into a regular punt and punt the ball if you don't just screw it up. Now, obviously, you're playing the New England Patriots. And it's amazing to me that when you try and outthink or out-strategize or out-coach Bill Belichick, what happens to you? It happened to Seattle on the goal line in the Super Bowl last year where they were going to be smarter than New England, and they sent in the goal line package, and New England countered with its goal line package, except they put three corners on the game because there were three wideouts in the game, right? And what happens? Ball's picked. New England wins the Super Bowl. Now, in a big game against a rival that you have to get by to get to the Super Bowl, you're in the game, and you try and out-coach them, I guess is the term you would use, and it backfires on you. Because you've got to understand, that team is going to be prepared. That's who they are.
Yeah.
Now, there are other teams that you play against where you recognize that they're – you know, that they don't do a great job with preparation, or there's a rookie special teams coach, or, you know, there's a situation where you say, okay, we may have an advantage here, but certainly against the New England Patriots, that's not going to be the case. You know, O'Brien, the special teams coach in New England, is one of the best in the business. He's been in the business for 30 years. Mm. So Scotty O'Brien's going to have to have his group ready to go. And again, just a bad play all the way around. Bad execution, bad play design, bad decision, and then, you know, really, I think a poor job of explaining exactly what he was trying to do, you know, to the media. So this is one that I saw something today that said this is the end of Pagano's career as a head coach. That play will be the thing that will be his last, you know, the last asterisk behind his name, if you will.
Well, I've got a few thoughts on that. I agree with you. I think what happened was that this happens a lot. Teams try to outthink and outcoach Bill Belichick. I think part of that's the pressure that they feel when they're playing the Patriots, because the Patriots score points for fun, but you don't give Tom Brady the short field. I thought that the other thing, Jeff, was, first of all, okay, if that's your concept, well, you've obviously coached that wrong somewhere during the week, or you've got something where the message isn't across, because they lined up illegally on the right-hand side. There was a flag on the play as well, because the guys, half of them were off the line of scrimmage and half of them were on. So there was an issue with the technicality of the call. And then I know that maybe the ball shouldn't have been snapped to Colt Anderson. But I think this sometimes when you see a team trying to draw somebody offside with a really hard count, and I'm sure coaches on the sideline have their hearts in their mouths hoping that their guys don't jump offside as well. And I think what he did by leaving those two isolated, surrounded by Patriots, he put them in a position where they could fail. And good coaches, you know, Belichick does it all the time. We talk about all those crossing patterns and all the pick routes and all of that stuff. Good coaches put their players in position to succeed. And even if the ball wasn't supposed to be snapped, by putting them in that position, you run the risk of somebody having a brain fart and snapping the ball, and that's what happened here.
Well, yeah, and you know, like you say, you know, you got a, what do you got? You got a wide receiver snapping the ball to a safety, right? how many times do you think they work on that? Just the exchange. Just think about the exchange and the potential for a drop snap or any of those other things. Again, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, obviously not shared by Chuck Pagano, but in my opinion, you better make sure that the guys that you're asking to do things in the pressure of the moment, that's what they do, right? And the risk reward ratio and risk to benefit ratio, it just doesn't, to me, equate in a big game.
No.
Win the big game by doing your job, by out executing, out fundamentaling, out playing New England. And it's what Belichick, I would encourage fans, you can go on the internet, there's a thing called Do Your Job.
Yeah, they can get it off, they can download that on Sky Sports, Jeff. It's on demand on Sky Sports.
Well, go to Sky Sports and download it, because it's absolutely fantastic. And it's a really good look inside of that organization and what makes them so good. Because one of the things that they preach all the time is do your job. Do your job. One of the things I picked up personally from the way the Patriots work And this is from a guy that played for them, that was a player for us at Hawaii, was a second-round draft choice, and was on a couple of Super Bowl teams with New England. I said, what makes them so unique? And he said, Belichick does an unbelievable job of drawing from other sports and other, you know, other environments to illustrate points to his team. So last week for us, we're talking about do your job. And I use clip of the Michigan Fab Five basketball team that called a timeout that they didn't have, which led to a technical foul and points for Duke. And the most talented, the most highly recruited, most talented college football team, maybe or college basketball team, maybe ever, doesn't win a national championship because guys didn't know situational basketball. So we were preaching to our guys last week about situational football, right? Situational football and how you have to understand the situation, and the situation can't be bigger than you. And so, again, that's one of the things. It's a great piece. Download it from Sky Sports. It's awesome, and it gives you a great – and every kid, every player, every coach ought to watch it and recognize that if you just do your job, not more than your job, just your job, you're going to have a chance to succeed.
Yeah, I thought the interesting part of that documentary was that they ran that Julian Edelman play hundreds of times in practice, seemingly. I mean, it was over and over in practice. The touchdown pass that Edelman threw in the playoffs against Baltimore. They didn't run it in the playoffs until they were content that they'd run the backside off it during practice. And that's an interesting point you made, Jeff, about the risk to reward here, because Chuck Pagano talked, and this final thing and then we'll move on, but Chuck Pagano talked about how they were trying to catch them in an illegal formation, or at least one of the things he was trying to do was have them burn a timeout. So you weren't even going to pick up a first down. Part of your belief was this whole risk is to make them burn a timeout. We're not even going to keep the ball. We're just going to make them burn a timeout, then we're going to punt it. That's not good risk to reward, surely.
No, and I think that's just reaching. That's reaching for a justification of the call, you know. And let's go back to that Edelman thing, and I think this is a really critical point. They ask Edelman to throw the football. Well, you say, well, that's a receiver. He doesn't throw the ball. Yes, but he's a kid that played high school quarterback, played junior college quarterback, and was a college quarterback. So throwing the ball under pressure, making decisions about to throw it or not throw it, those are things that he's done thousands and thousands of times in his career, in his development as a player. He didn't ask another guy. He didn't ask Gronk to throw it. He didn't ask, Amendola to throw it. He put it in the hands of a guy who had done that thing previously. That, again, is just the little details of coaching that, you know, people a lot of times don't see. And that's why I love doing the analyst job for Sky, because it gives us an opportunity to bring that kind of stuff to the viewers.
It's a great point, Jeff, because if you watch the Cincinnati Bengals, who, if they run an end around and the receiver's going to throw, who is it that does it? It's Mohamed Sanu. Why? Because he was a college quarterback. They're not asking AJ Green to do it. They're not asking Tyler Eifert. That's good coaching. You put players in positions where they're comfortable. The Colts didn't put their players in a position and they lost that game on Sunday night. A couple of other things I want to touch on, Jeff, and then catch up with what you liked in NFL Week 6 before we make our picks in Week 7. I thought the Browns did play very hard against Denver, and then I thought when they had a chance to go for the win at the end, they really closed up when they got down near the goal line, and they went and kicked the game-tying field goal. By contrast, Carolina didn't. Carolina went for the jugular, and they took out the Seattle Seahawks. So with Cleveland, and I think it's the same with Jacksonville, who we'll see at Wembley this weekend, you hear the phrase all the time, learn how to win. You've got to learn how to win. And because Jacksonville have been in the lead for, what, 3 or 4 weeks in a row now in the second half, and they found a way to lose. As a coach, is there a way you learn how to win, or is it just you get one of those wins and then you kind of roll with it? I mean, is it something that can be taught, or is it something that's just felt and part of the emotion of the game?
Well, I think it's both of those things. First of all, to learn how to win, you got to win. Ultimately, you got to win on the scoreboard. That's the ultimate. But what's the process for that to happen? To me, Neil, it's your practice structure has to be such that you put the players in situational football enough times that they are, when they get in those moments, right? And Frank Gans, the greatest special teams coach of all time, used to say, those critical moments when man measures man, right? When you have to make a play, that you've been in that situation on the practice field with you know, and then one of the great things that, that I think Pete Carroll does, you watch their practice, and there's a winner and a loser in every drill, right? So that's how you learn how to win. You win on the practice field. Ultimately, you have to do it, at, you know, under the lights in the big moments. But you can't just say, well, you know, we got to learn how to win. That's a cop-out for me, to me. You learn how to win by your process. And, again, the great coaches that I've been around – all understood that. And so practice was competitive. Practice had a, had an outcome. Practice had a, you know, a consequence. You know, it's okay, man, we're gonna get three plays today and it's all gonna be third and five or more. Who's gonna win, offense or defense? So you're practicing situations. And again, for young coaches out there, for any coach out there, I think that's the way you should structure your practices. And so that when you get in the games, the players have been there and they can look at each other and huddle, go, hey, this is just like practice. We've been here. Let's go do this.
Jeff, I mentioned,
so I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned the Browns Broncos game, and there was a period in that game where Denver had gone 27 straight possessions without an offensive touchdown. They only had one offensive touchdown all night. And I don't know what to make of Peyton Manning, because so much of it looks ugly. And if I think if you took the jersey off of him and just gave him no name on the back of his jersey, you'd look at him and say he's one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. Then he puts one right on the numbers to Emmanuel Sanders for the touchdown to get him back in lead. Then he throws another interception that should have lost Denver the game in overtime, but the Browns went backwards and couldn't do anything with the ball. Are there certain players in the NFL, and I'm thinking of Brett Favre when he was at the end of his career, Joe Montana in Kansas City, are there certain players that are unbenchable, or should Denver be looking at Brock Osweiler? Because, I, you know, that's almost sacrilege to say, but if any quarterback in the NFL went 27 straight possessions without producing a touchdown, questions might be asked.
Well, I think there's a couple things at play here. Number one, what's the overall record of the Broncos?
Yeah, they're perfect, Jeff.
They're 6-0, right? And, you know, there aren't, you talk about numbers, put numbers behind the quarterback's name. We always say every time we talk about quarterbacks, we talk about what's the final analysis, what's the bottom line of the bottom line, and it's do they win?
Yeah.
Right? Now, he's been able to win, and a lot of that, frankly, has not been because of his play, it's been because of the play of the defense, but they're winning. So, there's also a psychological effect of what happens when you make a change at the most important position on the field.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a guy that if you do that, then you've got to understand, and I think Kubiak is very, very, because he was a quarterback himself, he understands the nature of that decision and all of the things that happen when you make it, how the team reacts to it. So I think as long as they continue to win games, there won't be a change. But at some point, the numbers, the just the sheer body of evidence that you have that he's not playing at the level that you need to play, because frankly, you can't. Their defense has played unbelievable and has given them an opportunity to win games. Ultimately, you know, that's hard to sustain over a 16-week schedule, a 16-game schedule. Mm. So they need production out of that position. It's the most fundamental position in the game, you know, and the most critical position in the game. So, again, it's interesting you talk about unbenchable. What happens with those great players like that at, as they get past their time? There's the, you know, you see those throws like you talk about, and you go, ah, he still got it, right?
Yeah.
But there's a longer and longer time between those throws as they as their skills decline, and yeah, they can still make the decisions. They can still throw, but you know, then all of a sudden you start to see all the other things, the warts come out, and it happens for everybody. It's going to happen for everybody that plays the game. It's going to happen to Aaron Rodgers at some point in his career, unless he decides to step away before, you know, before his time. So, you know, it's interesting. You brought up something, Neil, I really want to hit on. You talked about, then, really, really good point. Cleveland, how they played at the end. Where was the game at? Where was the game played?
They were at home.
All right. Now, you also talked about Carolina going for the jugular at the end.
Yeah.
Where was that game played?
They were on the road, Jeff.
Okay. All right. Now, strategically as a coach, when you're playing at home, and you're talking about playing for the win or play for the tie, you play for the tie at home because over time you're going to have the momentum, you got the crowd, you got all of that with you. When you're on the road, you have to strike for the jugular because it's a hostile environment. You don't know how many chances you're going to get. You know, everything stacked against you. Mm. So you play for the win, right? At home, you play to sustain the game and give yourself a chance at the end, right? So I understand the decision that Pettine made to play it, quote, close to the vest in that scenario. Because again, in general terms, the home field advantage should be +3 for you, mm. right? All right, so again, as you look at strategy, that's, I'm sure, why both of those coaches made the decisions that they made strategically.
That's interesting, Jeff, because you would actually think that intuitively it would be the reverse of that, that you'd have more confidence in front of your own fans, but I can see where you're coming from on that. Other stuff that caught our eye in week 6, Jeff, actually, when you get over on that telestrator in Sky Sports, can you show us why Seattle can't cover the tight end?
You know, the biggest thing that I saw at the end of that game was, first of all, let's give credit where credit's due. Olsen may be as underappreciated good tight end as there is in the game. All right, and again, Cam is playing really at a high level. That's another thing we need to talk about, is two quarterbacks playing at extremely high level right now that everybody had doubts about coming in, including me, right? And that's Andy Dalton and Cam Newton, but that's for another, that's another topic. Mm. I think the thing that I saw in the Seattle game was, you know, there's been a brain drain in Seattle, right? There has been on that defensive coaching staff. You look at now, Dan Quinn's gone, mm-hmm. right? You know, they've lost Kenny Norton, their linebacker coach who's been there forever, was with Pete in Carolina. You know, the head coach in Jacksonville,
Gus.
You know, Gus was a coordinator there. They've gone through. That's what happens when you have a tremendous amount of success. People want to come in and get your guys. Mm. And every time a guy leaves, you know, you say that we're going to have continuity because we promote from within and all that. But ultimately, that's a drain on your staff. That's a drain on, you know, the relationships that are fostered in the coaching room and in the locker room. That's a drain on your organization. So when I call it a brain drain, I'm talking about great coaches on that staff who other teams have come in and said, you know, Gus, come be our head coach in Jacksonville. You know, mm-hmm. Quinn, come be our head coach in Atlanta. Kenny Norton, come be our coordinator in Oakland. All right, so that hurts you. Ultimately, that hurts you, and I think you're seeing some of that in that Seattle defense because there were communication issues at critical moments. And I think it was communication from the sideline to the field because the guys on the field have played enough together, right? So that's where I think Seattle's taken a little bit of a step back.
Yeah, Seattle have given up 23 receiving touchdowns since the start of last season. 16 of those have been to tight ends. Jeff, before we move on to They Said What and to make our picks for week 7, what else caught your eye? I mean, is it those quarterbacks you talked about?
I mean, let's talk about those guys because, you know, Dalton was just beaten like a borrowed mule by the media last year. And it can't do this, can't do that, can't win, can't. But you know what? As you watch him, and I watched him against Buffalo, and Buffalo's throwing everything at him, trying to, you know, hit him and get him off his game and lots of looks and all the rest of stuff. And he just looked totally composed. Now, part of that is, they have an offensive line that is very, very, very good.
Might
and
be the best in the NFL
don't appreciate.
Now.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Neil. People don't appreciate how good Andrew Whitworth and that bunch are in front of him in Cincinnati. But Dalton has grown, and I think, you know, his relationship with the coordinator there has really, really been a plus for him. You know, Hugh Jackson came in and immediately when he was named coordinator said, I've got an elite quarterback. So he set the stage for greatness for him right there. Mm. And then they have really worked together, and I think that's a tremendous job. That's going to get Hugh Jackson consideration again to be a head coach in the National Football League. And then Cam, you know, is exactly the same down in Carolina. Here's a guy that loses his big receiver, his number one receiver, in, you know, early in the season. He's out there playing with a bunch of guys that are just guys. Mm. I mean, Ted Ginn's failed how many places, and you know, Funchess is a young kid, and Olsen's really his only threat. But, you know, you watch the things that he can do, and what a tremendous 6'6", or whatever, he is, 260, and can run, I mean, get away from things, and has, I mean, it looks, when he throws the ball, it looks like he's throwing peas. I mean, I swear to God, it looks like he's throwing frozen peas. That ball is so tight when it comes out of his hand.
And, Jeff, he's not perfect, is he? He's not perfect, but I think we've seen why he got that $118 million contract extension in the offseason, because he's a package. He's the strong arm. He's the big body. He is somebody who can lower the shoulder, as he did down near the goal line, and get the touchdown. There's more to Cam than just, if you're looking for pinpoint accuracy, then go and look somewhere else. But I think he's worth every dollar of that contract, because he gives you so many different things.
Exactly, and he fits to a T what they want. Mm. Exactly what they want. He's a guy who can give them another dimension, as you said, running the football, whether that's when a play breaks down or by design. He's got a big, strong arm. He's growing as a quarterback. Fundamentally and in every way, he's growing as a quarterback. But I applaud Gettleman and that crew down in Carolina for making that decision, saying he's our guy, and then now starting to build the offense around him and tailor it to the things that he does well. And, you know, shoot, those two young quarterbacks that are ascending in the game, and I think that's phenomenal for the National Football League. And Carolina, what a story, huh? What a story. Go to Seattle and don't even blink. I mean, they just go up there, and they were the bullies. They, you know, they just said, "Well, come on, let's play. You want to play that game? Let's play."
The bully smacked them in the nose, and they kicked the bully in the acorns, Jeff. I'll tell you what. Actually, you mentioned Hugh Jackson there. I think he is going to be a head coach, but I thought I see a couple of times where he overthinks things and tries to get a little bit too cute. There was a pass out to his offensive lineman. The week before, he had both tackles split out as wide receivers. There was an end around, and a few of those things haven't come off. I mean, sometimes you've got to not overthink it.
Yeah, but you know what, though? It's part and parcel. Now, here I go painting with a really big brush, but I'm going to do it. That's offensive guys. That's just the way they're made, right? They want to be the smartest guy in the room all the time. I've been around enough of them to know, and I'm not saying that as a knock. I'm just saying I've never met an offensive coach that didn't believe everything he drew up was going to be the best play in football and score a touchdown. I mean, that's just, if you ever been at a cocktail party, Neil, and there's a guy that wants to show everybody he's the smartest guy in the room, that's what you look at him and go, if this was a coaching staff, that'd be the offensive coordinator.
Whereas I'm just looking for the peanuts and a beer. Let's play They Said What, because it will give us a chance to talk about a couple of other little issues from the weekend. We will make our picks, but we'll do our picks quite quickly today, Jeff. We won't get into as much detail because it's good to chat with you about other issues. So They Said What. This one comes from Mario Williams, the Buffalo Bills defensive end. He says he's talking about how the Bills are rushing three people a lot of time in Rex's scheme rather than four. He said, we have a lot at stake because of who we are, who we've been, and the amount of money this team put in up front. You got to let them go, or what's the point? Mario is not happy with that defensive scheme, Jeff.
No, he's not. And, you know, this is what happens, again, you know, when guys are used to doing things a certain way, then they come in and you get changes, and the changes, quote, don't work. Right? Because the bottom line is, you know, for the measuring stick that all defensive linemen and defensive line coaches go by is how many times do you sack the quarterback? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, you know, there's so many illustrations that I could give coaches or give the fans about defensive line guys that all they care about is those numbers. I mean, getting to the quarterback, because that's how they're measured. And defensive linemen are the same. It's unfortunate, and I think this is part of one of the great mysteries of the Bills, right? That right now, and this has kind of always been Rex's teams have had this kind of drama around them all the time, whether it's taking penalties and doing push-ups and getting wristbands, and now the defense. It's kind of what happens when you're in Rex's, you know, in Rex's team. But the bottom line is they're not being productive right now. I think they have like 6 or 8 sacks on the season. And that's not enough when you – the one thing I agree with Mario is you spend all that money on that defensive front, you better get production out of them.
Yeah, that's where you want that scheme to fit. I mean, Miami were the evidence, Jeff. They were 1 sack in their first 4 games. They sack the – they fire the defensive coordinator. Dan Campbell comes in as head coach. They get 6 sacks in 1 game against Tennessee. And I've got a quote. This is the next quote, and then you can comment on the Dolphins-Titans game. This is from Ken Wisenhunt, the Titans head coach. He said, "I think it was done with the idea of trying to hurt our quarterback. That's BS football." This is the Olivier Vernon hit on Marcus Mariota.
You know, this is one of the things about having the press conference right after the game.
Yeah, you're angry, right?
Is you are going to always be defensive of your players. You're going to be in defend. You're going to defend mode of your players, particularly when a guy gets hurt and it's your franchise quarterback. I've looked at the play, Neil. I looked at every angle of the play. I looked at the all 22. And yes, you could say that, you know, it appears that he went low on the quarterback when he could have gone, you know, been above his waist. But I just think it's, and certainly Ken Wisenhunt does too, because he played in the National Football League. It's very, very rare that a guy actually goes out with the idea of harming another player in the game. So, I think it's an unfortunate comment. Obviously, Olivier Vernon, you know, defended himself vigorously. You know, he said, "I'm not a dirty player. I've never been a dirty player. That's not who I am." I'm sure that a lot of it for Ken was the fact that it was his quarterback. You know, he's the franchise guy, and they lost a very close game that they probably going into the game felt they should have won. So it's unfortunate, but again, I just want to, I think the fans really have to understand that it is very, very rare.
Yeah.
Because there's an unwritten code amongst the players about you don't try and damage another man's career and take, you know, food off his table and, you know, by that kind of play. Because if you're one of those guys, it all evens itself up.
They'll get you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I don't know what Olivier's like in a defensive huddle, but I spent a lot of time with him over the summer. He's a good guy, and I don't think he would do that kind of thing intentionally. Last quote, and then we'll get on to our picks, comes from Pete Carroll. He says, "This season is not done at all. It's just been very, very challenging, but we should be 6-0. I mean, every coach thinks they should be 6-0, but this, I think it's important to point out that these Seahawks, there are problems there, Jeff. There's undoubtedly problems, but they're not done, are they? They're 2 games back from Arizona, and they went on a run towards the end of last year.
Yeah, and I think the fact that Arizona lost this weekend gives them hope, right? They don't want to go 3 down at this point in the season, certainly. But, you know, again, you look at the team, and now, see, this is we're at the point now, Neil. We got 6 games in. You can start to draw some conclusions about who people are and where their liabilities are, where their strengths are. For Seattle, it's like you said. Number one, you got to be able to defend the tight end. You haven't been able to do that. You got problems up front on offense. You know, you got to be able to protect your quarterback. He's taken way too many hits, been sacked way too many times. Jimmy Graham, I won't say it's not working, but it's certainly not getting them what they anticipated they were going to get when they made the trade. So, your tailback, who is the heart and soul of your offense, has been hurt and nicked, and so has been inconsistent throughout the, you know, first six games of the season. You're not in trouble, quote, in trouble, but you're in, you know, an area where you got to say, we have concerns, we got to mitigate these liabilities, we got to, you know, protect our quarterback better, we got to limit turnovers, and we got to figure out how to cover the tight end on defense, and we're going to be okay. But, you know, this has been a trying first six games for Pete and that crew.
All right. Jeff, listen, I've just stopped recording for a second. We'll do the picks, but just literally give one line on each game because I want about 5 minutes on the pit. 5 minutes on the picks, and then I want one question in the mailbag. So, we'll just do like one line each on the games, okay?
All right, got it.
Okay, let's make our picks then for week 7. Jeff, we'll start with the game Thursday night on Sky Sports, Seattle at San Francisco. I like what I've seen more out of Colin Kaepernick. 49ers play good defense at home, but I'm going Seattle on the road. What about you?
Seattle on the road.
All right, let's move on to Sunday then. Buffalo at Jacksonville at Wembley. What are your thoughts?
I got to say Buffalo. I just think they're a better football team, even without Harvin and even without Kyle Williams.
Yeah, I think I trust the Bills a little bit more to get this win. I'd love to see Jacksonville win, but I'm going Bills as well. Minnesota at Detroit. So the Lions got their first win of the season last week. Minnesota or Detroit, Jeff?
I like Minnesota. I like what Zim's doing up there.
All right, I'm going Minnesota as well. New Orleans at Indianapolis. So there are some problems with these Colts. New Orleans got a big win last Thursday night, so they've had a little bit of a longer week. Saints at Colts, Jeff.
Just giving it to Indianapolis because they're at home. The Saints played better last week, but again, are they going to be able to hold up against all of those weapons and Andrew being another week healthier?
Yeah, I'm going Indianapolis as well. Like what I saw out of Landry Jones, Big Ben says he could be back this week, but Pittsburgh at Kansas City, I think Pittsburgh's just the better team. I'll go Pittsburgh.
Kansas City's fading, Neil, and again, you talk about teams showing their warts. That's one of them.
Yep.
I'm going to take Pittsburgh.
Both going Pittsburgh in that one. Houston at Miami. I think Miami keep it rolling with Dan Quinn. Campbell.
He appears to have captured the locker room. They played for the first time, they played with passion. You saw some juice. You saw, hey, Miami, they look like they weren't just out there on, drinking caipirinhas and hanging by the pool, at halftime. They looked like they wanted to play football.
So Miami?
I'm going to take Miami.
What's a caipirinha?
It's a drink, a Brazilian drink. You got to try one.
I will. Not today, but I will at some point. The Jets at New England. Good test here for the Patriots. Jets would like to play tough defense against those receivers. It's a good game, this one. Jeff, who do you like?
I'm going to take the Jets in an upset. I think that Todd Bowles is doing a great job up there. They think they match up better. You got guys who will know that New England system. And, this is a surpriser, but I'm going to take the Jets in an upset.
All right, I made my one brave pick last week when I went with the Browns over the Broncos, so I'm going New England. Cleveland at St. Louis. I like the Rams, the way they play at home on defense. I'm going Rams.
I like the Rams. I think they're a better football team, and again, Jeff's done a great job of starting to mold that team to a Jeff Fisher kind of football team.
Okay, Atlanta at Tennessee. I'm going to have the Falcons getting back on track here.
Agreed. And I think with Mariota's MCL sprain and him being questionable, even if he's going to play, he's going to be limited. So I'm going to take Atlanta.
All right. Let's race through these last few games, Jeff. Tampa Bay at Washington. Washington seemed to be fading. Kirk Cousins makes some bad decisions with the ball. But I think at home, I would give the Redskins the edge over Tampa Bay.
I agree. There's enough that you see that's good from Washington that I think they'll be a poor Tampa team.
Oakland at San Diego. Do you know what? I'm tempted to pick. I'm going to go Raiders here. I think the Raiders get one. San Diego are in close games every week, and sometimes they come up short. I think this will be another one.
500 yards last week and don't win the football game. That's amazing. I'm going to take San Diego to get a W in this one. Hurts me, Raider Nation, but I got to take San Diego.
All right. Let's have a look. Dallas at the New York Giants. I don't trust either of these teams. Matt Castle in at quarterback for the Cowboys. I probably would go Giants being at home with a slightly better and healthier team at the moment.
Yeah, but you know what? You look at all the guys that are out with the Giants right now. If they don't get some people back on defense in particular, they're going to struggle. I'm going to take the Cowboys here.
All right, so you're going Dallas in that one. Philadelphia at Carolina. Eagles have got wins in their last two games, but I really like what I'm seeing from Carolina. They're at home. I'm going to go Panthers.
I agree, and they're not going to make the mistakes that New York made last night, throw all those interceptions and get sacked that many times. So it'll be a close game, but I'm taking Carolina.
All right. On to Monday Night Football to wrap it up here then. Baltimore at Arizona. I think there's a chance, Jeff, that you and I are starting in the secondary for the Ravens on Monday night, because if they're letting Anquan Boldin get behind them for 50-yard gains, they're in trouble. I'm going Arizona.
Talk about your, endangered coaches and guys under fire. John Pease, the defensive coordinator, can't feel very good. This is a bad, bad Baltimore team, and I'm going to take Arizona bounce back at home.
All right, so we are almost out of time on Inside the Huddle. I do want to take one question in the mailbag, Jeff, just quickly to finish it off. It's from Tony Allen, not our Tony Allen that we both know and love, but it says, Why does the punter tend to hold on the field goals and extra points? There must be a good reason, but it's escaping me.
Well, I think there's two factors. Number one, kickers speak the same language. It's not, you know, you'd have to go to another planet to find, you know. I'm dead serious now. Those guys spend more time together. Like, I watch our punter, our kicker, during practice sometimes, and I just think that they are born different. They're just different.
Yeah.
And so they know exactly what they want, and that way they can practice throughout the day. When you've got a quarterback doing it or a wide receiver doing it, you get very little time because he's over there doing his skills, and, you know, obviously the receiver coach and the quarterback or whoever, quarterback coach, don't want him over there holding. So they kind of work that way together, and it creates that unspoken bond that they have. And I'm going to tell you something. People really need to pay attention to the idiosyncrasies of kickers sometimes, because they are an interesting group.
And that's from a special teams coordinator who's supposed to love those guys.
I love them as long as they put it through the pipes and they punt it 40 yards high with a 4-4 hang time. I love the heck out of them, but I don't understand
it. Sounds like a man who's had kickers win him some games and lose him some jobs.
Yeah, there's a lot of ex special teams coaches walking around with scraggly beards pushing shopping carts. Shuffling around because of kickers. That's all I'm saying.
And that is a good place as any to end. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. If you're going to the game at Wembley Stadium this weekend, have fun. Have a great time. Let's see you all out there packing out Regent Street on Saturday from 11:30 a.m. Should be a great weekend, Jeff.
The NFL circus is back in jolly old London town. Get to Regent Street. Get with Neil. You're going to have fun because the circus don't come to town every week.
Absolutely. And we'll be back next week to talk about all the big talking points and to look ahead to week 8 in the NFL. Until then, Jeff, say goodbye.
Aloha.